Hello, and welcome to Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else,
a series of conversations with innovative educators at colleges and universities across the country and around the world.
This podcast is produced by faculty and staff in the Center for the Advancement of Teaching and Faculty Development at Xavier University of Louisiana.
And now, let's talk about teaching, learning, and everything else.
This is Jeremy Tooman of CAT Plus Faculty Development here at Xavier, and I'm sitting with Ross Lewis of the Communications Studies Department.
Thanks for having me, Jeremy, and look forward to having a conversation with you about service learning.
Very good. Well, let's begin. Tell us a little about the current service learning course you teach.
Okay, so I'm teaching this spring semester a honors public speaking class, and it's a class that we've taught at Xavier since before Katrina, so 2004, I think, is when we introduced it. And we introduced an honors version of public speaking because we wanted to sort of test the idea that public speaking has relevance in society. And so rather than increase the number of presentations or sort of make more difficult the presentation work, the speeches that students gave, we decided that honors would, for us, connote public speaking courses that take public speaking objectives, etc., and apply them to a community need through a service learning project. So every semester we teach 1 to 2 sections of honors public speaking, and the service learning projects have evolved over time, and oftentimes the service learning projects and the direction of the students' speeches themselves focus on a particular issue that is relevant to a community partner. So this semester, the course is addressing a theme that we're calling democratic participation in the monuments controversy. And so essentially what we're doing is the course is responding to this ongoing controversy in New Orleans that most recently was reintroduced after the Charleston, South Carolina murders in an African-American church by white supremacists. And following those shootings, our mayor, Mitch Landrieu, following, I think, a response to a jazz musician, Marcellus, perhaps, who mentioned, you know, we have racist monuments here in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And the mayor then suggested that monuments be taken down in New Orleans. And so there became a sort of beginning or resurrection of an ongoing discussion, protest around the presence of Civil War era historical figures and events that have been linked to racism, genocide, white supremacy, etc. So what we're trying to, and I was directly inspired by the work of the activist group Take 'Em Down NOLA, and looking through the actions that they proposed, how they used public discourse, how they used speeches, how they used written rhetoric, how they used visual rhetoric. And I've also was a bit inspired by a text that I've been playing with over the last semester, which takes public speaking and asks the question, what does public speaking mean for democratic participation at a time when public discourse is at best wrought with division? And so these authors of this textbook take a traditional, they take the idea that public speaking is consequential. It has been since the time that it was, you know, like our American higher education use of public speaking as an important skill sort of goes back to classical Greek rhetoric, and the study of, you know, Greek rhetoric was embedded in what it means to be a democratic participant. And so the authors are asking these questions, what is our contemporary relevance? And they're using case studies of political divisiveness, both in the United States and globally. And one of the things that they do is they look at a form of public speaking called deliberative discussion, deliberative presentations, where they take a controversial issue, which they're defining as an issue that implicates a public that has not been resolved, and they're asking speakers to consider a minimum of 3 positions to that controversy. And they argue that every controversy, however bifurcated it might seem, can be complicated to include not just us versus them, for, against, right, left, but that when you start teasing out the right's position, the left's position, that there are variations there, that there's, and they're not seeking middle ground at all, they're seeking for, to complicate the debates that we're having around controversial issues. So we're applying that approach, and so essentially what we're doing is a partnership with 5 high schools in New Orleans, and so we have this ongoing event that has been used over the last 3 or 4 years in the Honors Public Speaking class that allows us to kind of vary by theme and by partner, and it's called Say NOLA, which is a name that students came up with to define a public speaking event that asks college and high school students to come together, listen to hopefully dynamic speakers, and then break into small groups and have conversations, debates, discussions about that issue, with the ultimate goal of raising awareness about the issue and engaging democratic participants in democratic participation. So in the past, depending on the issue, we would invite certain speakers, or we might partner with a community organization who is, for example, in the last year that we did this, we partnered with the Louisiana Bucket Brigade, who helped us coordinate speakers addressing environmental racism, environmental justice, and trying to raise awareness about those issues historically and in contemporary New Orleans area. So this semester, we're working with specifically a partnership with NOCA, and so we're working with students who will partner with Xavier students in facilitating small discussion groups. And so we'll have about 120 high school students, students from St. Augustine High School, St. Mary's, St. Catherine Drexel Prep, and McDonough 35, as well as NOCA and Xavier students, coming together to address these issues of what we're calling the Monuments Crisis. And so Xavier students will present 3 possible, they'll frame the historical context. They'll talk about what's been said, done, and legally decided here in New Orleans around, for example, the Robert E. Lee Monument, the Jefferson Davis Monument, the White League Monument, Beauregard Monument, and they'll frame that historically and contemporarily. And then they're going to cite solution A, solution B, solution C that have been proposed by groups. And right now, when we think about this, there's Take 'Em Down NOLA, who's saying take down these monuments and replace them with. Then there's a number of other groups who fought Take 'Em Down NOLA and the city council and the mayor in court, Save Our Circle, a group that's associated with families and descendants of Confederate veterans. And they're essentially saying keep them. And so we're looking also for what are other suggestions that have been made. Mm-hmm. So we're not framing Team A, Team B, choose a side, but framing these are strategies that have been suggested. What are the strengths and weaknesses? What values are they based on? Who wins, who loses, who gains, who does not? What ideologies are promoted by one particular position? And then we're asking the students, having heard these 3 short presentations, hopefully dynamic, delivered by Xavier students, we're asking high school students to work in small groups to go through a process called deliberative discussion, where they're asked to evaluate these various positions and to argue with each other and then determine what is it that they believe ought be done given the positions they're presented, what if they can come to an agreement on what they think should be done in that small mm-hmm. group, what's the next action to be taken. If they don't come to an agreement, where do they disagree? And so that becomes this moment of sort of pause, completion, where it's like, okay, so what we learned over this hour is these are the main things that we disagree on, or we agree on these issues, and therefore our next step ought be. So our goal really is not to, our goal is to raise awareness to the historical debate that has gone on for some time around these monuments, as well as to teach and experiment with what deliberative discussion looks like and feels like in a not so implicit, actually sort of explicit goal of training and teaching democratic participation as a deliberative process, which requires ethical listening, which requires critiquing a position you hold near and dear, which requires finding reasons, rational, logic-based reasons why you disagree with positions that you find deplorable, and asking, you know, young people to do that in conjunction with each other across campuses. We had originally, like, starting this project, wanted to do it as sort of a multiracial audience as well, and the racial makeup of the high school audiences will largely be African American, but there will also be presence like of white students as well. So it should be interesting. It's not as balanced racially as I would have liked, based on the schools we've historically worked with. But like there's a number of other kind of possibilities that might come out of this. Talking about race in a time in this country, in this place, it seems, well, it's always relevant, but seems particularly salient post election of Trump, etc. So yeah, that's a long-winded synopsis of the project.
This skill of deliberative discussion that you're bringing to these high school students, is this something you feel that they're not introduced to, not getting through traditional K-12 education, or do you feel you're more supplementing, augmenting what they do get? Where does what you bring and your students bring to the high school students fit into their overall education thing?
Yeah, I can't speak to what they're getting or not getting. I mean, I think that's I would take that as actually a suggestion for future projects that we do. If we're valuing this process of deliberative discussion, is it exactly what you asked? What is it augmenting, replacing, substituting for? And that's not something that we absolutely considered. For me, my thought was, one, the issue itself, these monuments which have been called anything from white supremacist to tradition, Southern tradition, so like bringing awareness to the history and the history of the debate, the history and then the history of the discourse surrounding it, to me is important. And I can't say yet whether it replaces or sort of supplements something missing in historical instruction in K through 12 schools. I do know that our primary partner for this year, NOCA, has said this dovetails really nicely with some of the history that we do for junior level, so like 11th grade students, among surrounding the Civil War and pre-Civil War, Civil War, and Reconstruction, their historical work. But in terms of deliberative discourse, my own understanding of public schools in New Orleans and the state of Louisiana is there's not a oral communication course that's required. I mean, it might be offered, but those courses look a lot like the traditional course in colleges. They require the ability to do a research-based informative speech, to make an argument and support it with evidence. So persuasive speech, an informative speech, a narrative speech, focuses on some delivery techniques. And oftentimes, and this is an argument that we make for teaching this class in the Department of Communication Studies, those courses, like many required general education competency-based courses, can feel as if they're happening in a vacuum, separate from a world that is consequential. And so the idea of deliberative discussion for me is, if anything else, it's like, this is not a rhetorical, this is not a practice exercise. Mm-hmm. To participate in debate is meaningful. It's even, I would say, even more meaningful post-election, at a time when terms like patriotism are being used to label certain groups of people, and the questions of participating in protest, in using discourse in a public format to express dissent, respectfully or not, is being called into question, and being called into question at the highest level by the President of the United States, where states are introducing legislation, whether it succeeds or not, to inhibit American citizens' opportunity to dissent in public, to use public discourse. To me, for those reasons, even if deliberative discussion is embedded into high school curriculum, this would allow them to do it around an issue that they visually see every day, and to me, like, that's good practice as citizenry, to be a democratic participant in a democracy that's fraught with, always, whether it's this year or in the past, with challenges. To me, it's just like, It's an ethical imperative.
Very good. It seems that this course really fills a community need on several levels with the sort of deliberative discourse as one goal or one outcome, but addressing this debate of the monuments and engaging citizens, young citizens, with the debate as another community need. Mm-hmm. So it seems like it's really manifold in how it engages with the communities and the sort of needs that it addresses. Talk for a minute then about your students, the Xavier students, and their outcomes, and maybe how you see these experiences and the skills built in this class then going on to inform their careers or their lives. They may not be in New Orleans, but they may be elsewhere.
I guess I would kind of continue with the idea that facilitating these conversations means they have to participate in them themselves, even as temporary residents and citizens of this city, which has controversial monuments which have been linked to white supremacy. Participating in public discourse around a controversy, I hope, would be training for being citizens in the world, whether that happens to be in New Orleans in the United States or elsewhere. And to me, like the competency or the training is connected to participation, and a participation that for me as a citizen feels sometimes or often challenging because feels hopeless at times. Particularly in our sort of milieu of slacktivism and online activism, mm-hmm. and petition signing and the use of social media, all of which I think serve tremendous functions, positive functions for awareness raising and mobilizing actual bodies on the ground. But to frame and to think critically about when is public discourse productive and for whom and to what ends? When is public discourse unproductive and who says so? What means and methods can we use so that if we're going to talk about taking down these monuments and then there's a solution to physically take them down, mm-hmm. outside of some official sanctioned take them down council ordinance, those are actual moves made in the public, framed by public discourse. We need to critique whether that's efficient, effective, ethical, when ethics change based on what groups are listened to or not, and those are oftentimes, in this case, especially based on race, gender. So for me, it's like, it's again, goes back to like this idea of citizen training, mm-hmm. and I don't think that that's like absent at mm-hmm. school like Xavier or mm-hmm. other institutions. I'm not claiming that. I just, for me, it's also my 2017 citizenship reaction to being in the world, and my employment involves teaching, and I'm perfectly fine with politicizing teaching because it's already always politicized. We serve something, whether it's economic reproduction or ideological reproduction, mm-hmm. whether we're denying it or not, it exists in it. So for me, like, if anything else, it's like, participate, feel what it is to participate, feel what it is to engage others in participation, feel struggle, mm-hmm. feel success, feel failure, and make a decision on this issue for yourself. Mm-hmm. Decide to follow up to participate on this issue for yourself and see where that takes you. Mm-hmm. It might move you away from future activities like that, but mm-hmm. it's your body that's been there to experience mm-hmm. and say, I want to do that, follow that path, repeat that process, or not, or something different.
Maybe follow up on some of your students' specific moves and the reactions. Have you seen people become passionate, become engaged? Have you seen people withdraw from the issue? What have been some of the reactions?
So the class caps at 18 students, and we had 17 or 18 students, and we're at 14. The first, and this is week three of the class, at this moment of our conversation, and so like in probably halfway, three quarters of the way through the semester, we'll have this event, so we're building to this event.
Mm-hmm.
The students were told, like, first day, this is our project, this is the theme, this is what these monuments are, this is the process that we're going to pursue, and to take that seriously, is this something you want to consider? Three out of 4 out of 18, so I don't know if that was specifically because of the project or because of service learning, mm-hmm. or of something else, but I welcome those decisions. Once we've started to talk, the first few weeks, I've asked students to do some basic research on using local news databases to find out what have journalists said, what have these groups representing different perspectives said. We haven't done full-blown research on the historical perspectives, who these monuments represent, etc., And then, where do you stand on this issue? I have an entirely African-American audience that seems to be mixed between natives of New Orleans, natives of the South, not New Orleans, and then some that are outside of the state. I was initially surprised that 2 to 3 students, maybe 4 out of 14, already knew Take 'Em Down NOLA. Some knew quite a bit about the history of the neighborhoods in which the monuments have been placed, and I know Xavier students have been active in Take 'Em Down NOLA. So already some students have said, I already have an allegiance to Take 'Em Down NOLA. These are white supremacist statues. That didn't surprise me. What surprised me was that they were already familiar with an activist organization,
mm-hmm.
who's been active and named in the last 18 months. And so that was encouraging because they're invested in the issue. It also raises this opportunity for them to have already joined a perspective or a side, and then by the nature of this process, we'll be required to mm-hmm. present information that critiques a perspective that they endorse and support, and then presents strengths and weaknesses and investigates the values and talks one-on-one if we're able to secure conversations and interviews with people who are attempting to save what they're calling white supremacist monuments, what our students would call. So they're having to engage the other, and as well as critique their own positions. I've found in just really quick conversations so far, these interesting moments, like, and so non-verbally I'm watching conversations where it's like, wow, if you're asking me to find what the authors of our text are calling characteristics of unproductive discourse, which might include things like divisiveness and lack of listening and a tendency to winning, and where they're analyzing rhetorical discourse that's offered, for example, by Take 'Em Down NOLA. There's this moment where students who have said, I believe these are racist, white supremacist monuments, I believe Take 'Em Down NOLA is correct. At the same time, if I'm asked to attach these unproductive discourse characteristics to that rhetoric, I see connections of that. By this definition, it's unproductive. So at that moment, there's non-verbally, it's sort of like, how can something be unproductive that I believe in? And then we're able to look at the category unproductive. Who says that these unproductive characteristics mm-hmm. are in fact unproductive? Unproductive for whom?
Mm-hmm.
For what? You know. And then we talk a little bit about, how do we define productive, unproductive?
Mm-hmm.
Can something be labeled? What's the productive use of anger? What's the productive use of physical demonstration, of exaggeration? It's both a rhetorical strategy, but as a strategy to provoke conversation. Does it shut down conversation? But it's interesting to watch, and I'm most interested, because it's really early, I'm most interested to watch emotional reactions that we have and our attempts to apply logos, right? The use of reasoning and arguments and evidence, because I think that's, there's a lot of name calling on both sides, and they're already looking at internet trolls on both sides of the debate, largely racist trolls, and so name calling is easy to define. Okay, it's unproductive. It takes us away from the issue and towards labels. If those labels are accurate, like, what do we do with that? And so playing with those ideas, I'm more interested, it's difficult for me to remind myself, to sort of say, okay, the process is productive, or the process has value at the moments when what I most want as a citizen is different than what I might want as a teacher. Because what I want as a citizen is for these things to, I have a particular stake in this. I want these things removed, and I want a particular action taken. And I've acknowledged that, like, okay, this is me. This is you. So now what? So our reactions are, I mean, that's what I'm interested in to watch, especially because they're supposed to be facilitators, not cheerleaders.
It sounds like some really interesting outcomes that will only become more interesting as you get further in. To finish, I know you've been involved with service learning at Xavier for a long time. Talk for a minute, if you would, about the progression you've seen in your years involved with service learning at Xavier.
I guess for me personally, are you asking on behalf of the campus or?
Yeah, your perceptions of service learning on campus.
Yeah,
as you've watched it and been a part of it over a few years now.
I mean, I think this probably speaks of other places as well, but here what I've watched and appreciated is like faculty members as members of a community, say New Orleans or Xavier, following projects that largely follow their activists' interests. Sometimes their communities, sometimes groups they've advocated for before, or issues that concern them, and then thinking through ways that those issues, communities that need to be addressed, social inequalities, etc., might connect back to the discipline that they're working in. And I think that's sort of my bias. I've followed that path, but I've watched others, and I've encountered faculty members off campus working with an organization that I've worked with, the Louisiana Bucket Brigade, for example. Like, okay, so you're personally engaged in environmental activism. Well, this now makes sense how you're trying to tie it back into this particular science course or this communication course. I think that's an interesting way for maybe accidentally, but useful way in which our service learning at Xavier and other places can benefit the community. And so we think about that traditional idea of collaboration and like who benefits. Is it the students getting an academic learning outcome and getting credit, now increasingly a credit of citizenship on their resumes and things like that? Or is it skewed towards addressing a social problem? Right. I would always err on the side of community need, because I feel like the university is always already one up in the power dynamic, and I think there always is the power. So if faculty are following, and I think they always are, I think it's selfish of us and self-centered, and it's okay that we're like, okay, I'm interested in that issue. Issue A matters to me. Issue D, not so much. So I'm going to do a project with issue. But what that does is it creates, I hope and I think, projects and faculty and partnerships that are more sincere, and faculty are concerned about the community outcome, which is, you know, a vague term, but the concrete result of working in that place around that issue, and hopefully build sustaining partnerships, because it's driven by this investment.
They're invested.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
That's kind of what I've watched.
Yeah, that's interesting. That speaks to the benefits of service learning to the faculty who engage with these projects and develop them as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jeremy. I enjoyed
it. Me too.
Thanks for listening to this installment of Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else. For more information, please visit our website at cat.xula.edu.
That's cat.xula.
Until next time, keep on teaching, learning, and everything else.